This session has 150 slides that have been narrowed down to slowly 111. I think we're at about 99 or something that I'm actually going to present. So I promise you'll be bored by slides. No, the truth is this session is going to build on what we talked about last year. So just by show of hands, so I have a bit of a feeling for the room, how many people saw the presentation or watched it online, when to use what kind of from last year Ignite? Looks like a good portion of you, maybe half. So I promise there's very little repeat. I tried really hard to make this new content that is additive. If you haven't seen last year, that's okay. The key stuff is all here. And you should just maybe, if you're listening to this recording, go and watch the previous one to help give you a little bit more context. So this is a really difficult topic. This has been many weeks of long, long hours trying to put together and narrow and narrow and narrow down the many things that we should talk about today. So I really hope that this is going to work for you guys. I'm going to plug right at the beginning that I would love to have your evals. I want to know what's worked well in this presentation so that if I'm invited, luckily and hopefully next year, to speak about this again, we can tailor it a little bit more based on your feedback to make sure that the content resonates with you. So my name is Richard Harbridge, and I am a really, really friendly individual. So if you have questions, if you have ideas, you're like, hey, we're doing this stuff right now. I'd love to show you what I'm doing. Yes, let's connect. If you really want to help out in this effort of trying to spread awareness around when to use what, I please share. Share in tech communities. So if you haven't seen this yet, Microsoft tech communities. Used to be the IT Pro Yammer Network. Now we're up online. Please share your thoughts and ideas there. There's a second screen experience for this session that you can actually go and reply and add from a threading perspective a bunch of content and examples. Maybe even upload some stuff with approval, obviously, of your legal department. But share some of what you're doing as your organization. All right. And one last comment. I'm a chief technology officer of a company called Tutelead, and really, I would say 80% of my time in the last year has been just dealing with adoption and change management and these types of things. So it's been really fun to be able to just focus on this for the last year and a half. You want to download the white paper. Now, just as a caveat, the white paper was updated in August. It does not include some of the newest things that were announced this week, mainly because I didn't know what was for sure going to be announced. So we have an update in the works that we're working really hard on. So this is a 70-plus page white paper. That's right. It's more than 60 pages. I'm sorry. It has now grown because we've added things like planner guidance and other things into it. This is not, again, what I'm saying go and use, but it's a great foundation, and it's got a lot more detail than what I'll be able to cover in this session today. All right. This is what I want to talk about today. There's basically three things, areas of focus that we're going to have a conversation around. The first one is really about what's changed in the last year and a half and how has that impacted the when to use what discussion. So if you kind of have your idea in your head, you might think of the new experiences and groups and things like that, and how does that change the story for when to use what? Teaser, it's a lot better than it was before, and it's getting even better in the months ahead. Another big point that we're going to talk about today is visualizations. So I've seen a lot of organizations take the wonderful material we did last year, and they've made wonderful visualizations, but that's only a part of the journey. So we'll talk about why it's super important to also have scenarios and to kind of create user stories and user journeys. The last thing we're going to talk about is actionable guidance. The problem often is that we come up with this wonderful high-level stuff around when to use what from a strategic perspective, but then what do we do? Right? How do we actually make this a reality? So we'll talk about that. So let's dig into the first one. This is a key concept, right? We don't have a versus discussion. This is not a productive discussion. We learned, we thought originally back in the day, we actually thought this was the right way to approach the issue. You know, should we use SharePoint or Yammer? Should we use groups or SharePoint? Should we use this or that? And what we realized is the or the versus conversation isn't really accurate because it's not how people work. People work across many technologies. So this was an example that was used last year. I'm going to simplify it for this one, where basically when you create events, let's say I'm going to go create an event for a launch of Office 365, right? So if we're piloting or we're launching Office 365, it's a great opportunity. Maybe we schedule something, so we coordinate with individuals in the organization. That's a meeting that we set up. We have the meeting. We actually share some notes in the meeting. Those notes are then stored in OneDrive for Business as a temporary location. When the meeting's done, what we'll do is we'll take those meeting notes and put them into a group site or a SharePoint site or a group, a group site, I guess, a combination, which now we will have. And then once we have the content within that group site, We're actually going to be able to share and work on it as a team, really kind of build out the agenda for the launch day, some of the key activities. One of the things we might have is the agenda itself we might publish to Yammer so we can get feedback from the broader organization. What would you like to see on the launch day? And then we'd actually hold the launch, which could have Skype for Business, maybe for the actual session recordings. Maybe we put those on Office 365 video, and so on and so forth. So what actually I'm describing here is that users in the day-to-day use of SharePoint in Office 365 and Yammer and all these other technologies, they use them together. It's an and discussion, right? I go from this technology to this technology to this technology, and, not versus. So that's the idea here. So the real question for this year is, what are the new and options? So if we think of and, what are those new ands that we need to consider? How does it change the journey for the user in this case? Is it something like we only use the groups and we can reduce the number of different applications that they're using? Or is it just that the experience as they go through these things has been improved from a layered perspective? So we'll talk about that. So let's start with that first conversation, Yammer and groups. At this conference, they've announced a lot of wonderful things. We now know that when you create a group in Yammer, or you create a group through Office 365 Groups, you can actually have it integrated. You can have it integrated with SharePoint, we'll talk about that, and you can also have groups integrated with Yammer. Now, when Yammer and SharePoint, or Yammer and groups are integrated, we actually now have the ability to have less places for files, right? Less confusion. When to use what? When should I store? From those who were here last year, you know this. When should I store documents inside of Yammer? Never. Only in situations where they're official documents, or we're not really updating them on a regular basis, or where we have an event like this and we want to share those documents to a broader audience, right? For those types of reasons, you still might use Yammer, even with this model. But what we can do is we can use SharePoint now to reduce all the other risks where people might share documents and not have the same controls and wonderful experiences for collaboration that SharePoint and Groups provides. Another interesting point here, and this is a minor one, but it's important, is that when you link to documents now, the links are rich. We have previews. We have that full fidelity. And this, again, encourages more people to do linking to shared documents from SharePoint and other places. And so this is really positive because, again, it reduces the sense of siloing where, oh, maybe that's one of the reasons I would upload content into Yammer instead of SharePoint so I could have those rich previews or it'd be easier to see. So again, lots and lots of progress here from the Microsoft team. Really loving it. Now, this, of course, is for new things, so keep in mind you have to understand the roadmap and you have to understand when this is going to apply to existing groups. But again, vision forward, does this reduce the challenges with when to use what? So far, it certainly does. Here's another example. We have notes. Inside of Yammer, we have something called Yammer Notes. Here we have OneNote. Again, we can use the OneNote capability within the group, and that can really improve not just Yammer, but think about a lot of these communities that exist. Notes is kind of this official, you know, frequently asked questions, things like that you might post into Yammer. Now what we might actually be able to do is have a number of different sections and pages and things like that, but in a cohesive manner with something like the OneNote scenario. So it actually does improve or change a little bit of the way we work in communities inside of a Yammer environment, especially when we connect the dots here. But again, probably for the better in terms of reducing the number of verses or discussions that people are having. Planner is also really important because Planner is not in preview. Planner is out. And a lot of organizations are using Planner today, and it's making a difference. It's making the organization more successful. A lot of smaller organizations or smaller departments use Planner on a regular basis to coordinate work management and things like that. And so when you think about a Yammer community or a traditional place in Yammer that you would be interacting, this actually is really, really helpful. Not for everyone, right? For the very, very large communities, this might not make as much sense. But certainly for those smaller communities that are really centric around key objectives or outcomes or things that they're trying to drive, this is a great way of coordinating work tasks and assigning things and doing that sort of thing. So really interesting opportunities here. And what we've seen in the last year and a half is users will go and create a group in Yammer, or they'll have a group in Yammer, let's say, and then they'll go create a group in Office 365 just for Planner. And so what ends up happening is now I have added more when to use what, because now I have the Office 365 because I wanted Planner for my group inside of Yammer. And again, this is going to help reduce a lot of that, you know, additional siloing and stuff that we've had. Another big point here is if you've ever used Outlook and Yammer, it's not bad, but you actually have to go through a lot of steps to email or to coordinate and communicate with a group in Yammer. You have to go to the Yammer interface in the bottom right, I got to copy this link, and then I got to go into the email, and then I add it. And if I want to repeat that and use that again, I need to add it probably as a contact or something like that. So there's a bunch of steps that are necessary there. This is much simpler. So again, it encourages more people that might be using Outlook or that are prefer to use their email experience to coordinate, reply to, et cetera, inside of Yammer to do it through this experience. So again, very, very positive change that it reduces siloing. And of course, the actual connectivity that's happening around membership is huge because that means we don't have to manage members in two locations for these new sort of Yammer and group designs. All right, but is there a new OR scenario or is there an existing OR scenario that still is around even after these updates? There is. So here's an example. If I create an Office 365 group in Yammer, it's going to have the conversations being fed by the Yammer newsfeed. If I have an Office 365 group created in other places, it's going to have the conversations based on kind of the exchange format. And so the question here is, what does that mean? So if we think about where we should build a community, because remember, these are net new environments, if I ask the question, okay, we have a community we want to build, a community of interest, a community of practice, where should we build that? There is a real bit of thought that you need to put into this now. And the thought is one of these things, right? We might use the Yammer side because we really like the large-scale community support, maybe the multilingual stuff, some of the other interesting things on the mobile applications, your wearable devices, some of the other really interesting innovation that the Yammer team is doing. And so maybe that's really important to us since that might be a reason to use that as our base. Or because the community already is in Yammer, right? That's in a culture of our organization and the people that are going to be involved, they kind of live and breathe in Yammer, so why put it anywhere else? At the same time, if your organization doesn't have all the community in Yammer, most of them are in email and other things, then it probably makes sense to use the conversation feed. It's also important to note that there's certain features still today, like the connectors, that are really helpful for communities of interest, where we can pull in data, right, from external systems and sources, but again, that's associated with the conversations feed. And the last point that I'll make here is that sometimes for compliance and auditing and other reasons, groups, because of the exchange kind of baseline of that, there's a lot more features that they might have that might make for, you know, very specialized security scenarios and other things, especially private scenarios, that might make more sense to use groups. And this is, again, just for the conversations piece, right? Where are the conversations happening? But you can already see that this is much better than it has been in the past. So let's move on. Let's talk about SharePoint and groups and what's changed there. So SharePoint and groups are now kind of the same, right? We have in a group site, when we create a group, we actually have a full site. And this is important because before, if we went to site settings or we tried to change, you know, add lists, et cetera, we weren't able to do that. And so one of the big things that we talked about, you know, previously was there's lots of reason to create a SharePoint site. You know, you want workflows, you want all sorts of other specialized scenarios like lists. That's a great reason to use SharePoint sites. But now the story has shifted. So when I'm creating new groups, I can use all of this power of SharePoint, so there's less reason to potentially have a SharePoint site and not a group, right? And have them kind of cohesively together. There are some reasons, though. I know this is a tech slide. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure I didn't say something I shouldn't. So here's the gist. There's a great reason to use a SharePoint site till today, the sort of traditional create new SharePoint site. And one of the reasons is for permissions. Groups has a shared membership, the idea of circle of trust, right? We all can edit things. And that's a really important reason for why groups are successful. Groups, it's simple. It makes sense. Everyone kind of shares. It's not dissimilar from Yammer in some ways, right? And so that's a big change for some groups or communities or types of sites that you might have today. And so that may not fit those kinds of sites where you might need that hierarchical modeling or you might need permissioning that's very unique for this specific thing. And you need to ensure that that permission is going to stay and it's not going to be changed by somebody else in the group who shouldn't have rights to change it, etc. So there are UX patterns that the Microsoft team's working on this. It's not like they're ignoring it, but I do want to note that today this is something that you should consider when you, even with the new features for why maybe to create a SharePoint site. Another great example here is that you might have publishing or communication-based environments like an intranet. Now, remember, there are team news and there's team, you know, sort of collaboration news and other things that you do want to use. But what about those other ones where we have, you know, very curated news, customized publishing experiences and things like that? Well, naturally, we don't need a lot of the group's features. And so if we don't need the group's features, then we would create the traditional SharePoint site. Make sense? I'm seeing nods. Awesome. All right. So mobility improvements. This is a newer issue. So one of the big things that I mentioned last year is that we have to make sure that our organization understands the many mobile experiences that exist. Because the secret with mobility is it's actually the session time, right? So what ends up happening is if I build an experience, a design experience on the desktop, I expect that you might be on there for hours at a time. And that makes sense. If I build it for a mobile device, I expect you to be in like 5-minute sessions, and you're doing that much more frequently throughout the day. I won't get into wearables yet. So if you think about this as a pattern, there's a reason that these mobile applications make sense, even with the fact that you could explore it in the browser, even if you have other ways to interact with it, because there's lots of things you want to do 50 times a day in these quick sessions. And so having these mobile apps and making sure users are aware of them is a great first step. But the mobile apps themselves, at one point, were kind of disconnected. That experience has improved in a couple ways. One of the ways is we actually see that things like the Delve Discovery is now in the OneDrive app. We also see that OneDrive has unified, which is a great thing. So we have OneDrive in both places for consumer and professional. And we also see things like the people search experiences and the consistency there between Delve and the SharePoint app. But more importantly, if you haven't seen this, I highly encourage you. I think Mark Cashman and Adam did a session on this where they at least did a quick mocked-up demo. Inside of the apps now, they actually made it so that it does what's called app switching. So you're basically switching your experience as you go through. This is great because you can have specialized apps for all of the things that you want to do, like file sharing and working on that, which is OneDrive for Business. And then you might have like groups for the conversations feed. And what's happening is as you click through the apps, it's not just opening the app, it's actually jumping to that appropriate section of the app. So is it perfect? No, but it's amazing because it means that my whole when to use what around mobile apps that I built a bunch of slides for was moot as soon as these features started to hit the market. So thank you to the Microsoft team, whoever built this. I love you. You made it easier to remove a bunch of slides from my deck. All right. Another great example of this is in the OneDrive experience, we now have Discover. So in the left-hand side here, we've had Shared With Me for quite some time, right? And now what we have is we have this Discover feature, which is really basically taking Delve, which is maybe another place I would need to go, and bringing it into OneDrive where I'm normally working. And OneDrive often is one of the very first workloads that are very successful in organizations. Maybe even the workload that you move to the cloud and you may have SharePoint on-prem or something, that's a great example of hybrid. And again, now I have this wonderful Discover capability. And remember, with cloud search service application and stuff, this can also be enabled. So really what we're saying is, hey, we reduced the places that you need to move to. You don't have to leave this experience if you want to understand what documents are kind of circling around you. And that makes sense, right? Like, the idea of discover documents around me makes sense because my files are all in OneDrive for Business, and that's where I work on my files. It's taken a step further with the further integration. In the previous slide, right, in this picture, we have groups in the bottom left-hand corner. So this has been around for a little while. Let me see if I can be pinch and zoom friendly. There we go. So we've had groups for a while. Now what we actually have is in the new designs and the new improvements, we actually have the ability to navigate SharePoint sites and groups and all that material. And we can actually edit it and it work on documents, et cetera, in the OneDrive experience. So OneDrive is really becoming OneDrive. It's becoming my work. My documents, regardless of where those documents are, regardless of where I want to work, I don't need to leave this contextual experience. And so that's, again, really great because it reduces the number of places I need to work. Now, it doesn't mean you have to use this. You can still go to those specialized places to work. But between the mobile apps and this, we can see a lot of consolidation and integration happening, which is wonderful to see. Another example here is the copy to SharePoint. So here what we had was we had the ability to go and work in these shared environments. So think of on the left-hand side, even though it says, I believe it says sites right now, think of that as shared, right? That's my shared environment. And because shared with everyone and some other folder concepts and other things are kind of removed from OneDrive or not encouraged. So now what we actually have is a new model. So what I've seen since this has been released when we work with customers, the customers that are using this use it almost as a way of sharing. And it makes sense. Like, if you're a user, what's one of the hardest things when people say, oh, you should share that document? oh, I don't want someone else to edit it. I don't want them to change it. Like, it's, I want my document. Well, that's okay. Copy it to a shared location, and that's the act of sharing. And now you have all the security that no one's going to touch that original document. You don't lose any of that. And at the same time, now you've transferred ownership from yourself to a shared membership, right? In a group or site, et cetera. Make sense? So this is a great way of sharing, and it makes total sense that this is primarily the use case that you're going to see is inside of OneDrive for Business to share to those other environments. So maybe hint to the Microsoft engineering team, and I know you're going to listen to this, maybe in the shared dialogue, we could have like a little copy too. Anyways, I'll talk to you guys after. All right, so another interesting thing here is the sync. Now, I debated putting this in because it's a bit technical, but I have seen a pattern where because the sync engine is so amazing in OneDrive for Business and the sync engine and SharePoint, you know, hadn't had those same updates, there was reasons that people would actually move their content to OneDrive for Business for offlining. We see that that pattern with the wonderful new sync improvements is also going away. So another big positive. I talked about Planner briefly, so let me just summarize a couple key points about Planner. One of the things that we ran into very quickly with organizations that were using Planner, full-on deployments, lots of teams across the organization using it, is there was confusion around when to use Planner and when to go to the next level. You know, when to use Planner and when to use something like Project Online. And what we basically did is we created a bunch of guidance, we put it in the white paper, and the gist of the answer is, if you're doing things like issue tracking and you're doing coordination around basically what we call project log type work, if that's happening, then naturally you're gonna move up the ladder. If you need to do a lot of resource management and things like that, that's also going to need to move up because you only have assignments and simple models inside of the Planner system. And then there's other specific scenarios that used to be true for documents where maybe because of the workflow and the metadata scenarios and other things that we could customize, that SharePoint made sense. But now, because groups are SharePoint sites and we have all that capability, this is now going to light up. So that's like a teaser of what will be updated in the white paper with obviously a lot of the language that I just described. I added this in kind of last minute. I didn't think this was confusing, so you guys let me know if this is true. Some people got confused by this message, so let me try and clarify things. Office 365 Video has been around for a while. It's where I go and build my video portal and work in that environment. And then something called Microsoft Stream was created for customers outside of Office 365. So if you don't use Office 365, you can go and sign up for Microsoft Stream and use that as an organization, you know, with your on-prem technologies or with, you know, competitive cloud technology that's kind of instead of Office 365. So that's great because, you know, if you're on Slack or something and you don't have any interest in Office 365, fine, use Microsoft Stream. That's the original intention. Now, it has new features and new UX experiences and other things. What's going to happen is the engineering team's going to work on combining those, and we're going to see if we're just planning our normal work, we're in Office 365 Video, right? Because that's where all the governance and compliance controls, that's where we should be working if we have Office 365. That'll now come in, and we'll see improvements there in a variety of ways. This shouldn't require a lot of retraining, and then there's inside the slide notes here, it explains like the links and things if you want to know more details about that. Well, hopefully that clarified some confusion for those few that are still confused by that message. Flow is a new experience. So an and, we talked about some of these ands that are very positive. Here's one where it's a new experience. So everyone has different interpretations of what flow is. Let me give you my quick pitch. I see flow as a way of democratizing integration. What happens is inside of organizations, we have an integration gap. Right? Inside of IT, we can integrate all sorts of systems, but we always have a backlog of stuff we never got to for integration. And for when to use what, this is a perfect conversation, right? Because if everything was integrated, oh, our experiences as users and helping users would be so much better. But the reality is it's not. So what Flow gives is users the ability for themselves to create, without IT support or help, they can create these integrations. Now, these integrations aren't simplistic integrations. They're actually things like triggering these actions, which gets into workflow, right, and gets into those types of patterns. So the idea here is I can create a really simple flow. Here's an example, right? I can create a flow that notifies me on my phone when my manager, Kamal Kipple, when he emails me with something important. Why do I do that? Because I have a lot of unread emails in my inbox, especially this week, about 400. Don't worry, I promise I'll get to them on the weekend. And so I sometimes don't always catch when there's a really important email that he needs me to look at. So what did I do? I added this flow. As an individual person, I thought, hey, this is a way to improve my experience. I'm going to make it notify me on my mobile app. So I'm integrating basically, in this case, my mail with basically my phone or other use cases. Here's another one, right? A very common one, which is maybe we have a vacation request system or something like that, and we have a list. And so as I fill out the vacation request or make some sort of request through a variety of means, I might have an approval. And so that approval, again, sends out an email and then takes specific actions. The idea here is it's pretty easy to build these flows, and they can start to connect different systems like email and SharePoint and many systems outside of Office 365, which, again, touches on the integration point, right? If I want to integrate everything from Dropbox to something else. But that creates a question, which is when should we use flow and when should we use workflow? And the question answer here is a little bit more complicated, so let me clarify with a couple points. Flow is in preview, so there's a number of gaps, and the flow team is working hard on closing these gaps, but as an example, until they get closer to general availability and release, there's governance controls and other things that aren't in place, and so if you think of something simple like, hey, I don't want to enable people in my organization to copy to Dropbox because we did this whole effort to migrate off of Dropbox to OneDrive for Business, that would be a feature that would be great to have, but it may not be available in the platform yet. And so you need to understand where is it today, and does that mean that we're just piloting and doing experimentation with this, or as an organization, are we ready to really start to champion this in the organization? It's also simplified. So there's actually an engine behind this that actually is driving, which is called Azure Logic Apps, where you can do pretty much everything that Flow does and way more with a lot more compliance controls, et cetera. But that requires a developer, which gets rid of the whole point of democratizing or closing that gap quicker because we don't need to necessarily involve IT as much. It also provides new options. So in my opinion, it complements. It's an and story. We have workflow and SharePoint designer workflows, et cetera. We have workflow and we have flow. And they both work well together until someday in the future, maybe flow gets some further updates and eventually has a level of parity with what workflow can do today. And there might be no reason to build sort of traditional SharePoint designer workflows. Now, if you're using a third-party tool, there's a couple vendors in the hall we're partners with. We love them. They also kind of close that gap in a different way, right? So that integration and that business process gap, they close it by giving users the ability to use their tools to make and produce workflows and stuff easier. So again, if you have Nintex, K2, et cetera, right? If you have a lot of those vendors and that are in the expo hall that are helping you with closing this gap, then it's a different story for you. So this isn't a universal truth, right? We're just saying generally these are some of the things to think about. What about what about Power Apps, right? So Power Apps is out there. When should we use Power Apps and why would we use Power Apps? Well, they're easy to build, so they're pretty intuitive. The idea, by the way, on Power Apps is really to close the app gap. So we have a mobile app gap. We have an app gap in the enterprise where there's all sorts of things that users wish they had a little app for, but they just don't. And so here's a way of closing that gap. So if we think about that, they're easy to use. They're very templated, right? That's a key message, just like the flows. We have this idea that they're easy to share. So it's very easy if I build an app or you build an app inside the enterprise as a business user or as a business leader, I can share that. Another one is in the future, users can actually build these apps from templates. So the same idea that I 100% think that Flow is amazing for because it takes all this Azure Logic App stuff and makes it in templates that make sense to users. Here we're going to have a future state where we're going to have all these wonderful templates within the Power Apps experience. Another big one here is that eventually Power Apps will be actually embedded into SharePoint. And so when we think of Power Apps today, a lot of times we think of the mobile app experience. And don't get me wrong, strategically I think that that's the key market that they're trying to address. But if we take a step back, there's lots of ways that we can use this in other experiences, like in the browser inside of a SharePoint site. So again, great to see that the Microsoft teams continuing to innovate here to make Power Apps a very powerful solution in the future. So how would you use it, Richard? Like, what are the things that you would use? Well, here's a couple examples. I might use it because I want a feedback app, but instead of the, you know, random out-of-the-box experience for a list, which is kind of clunky and not that pretty, then I would use a Power App and I would build a nice interface. Why am I clarifying that point? Because in SharePoint, the mobile app, you can actually go and edit list items. Thank you, Microsoft team, right? You're amazing. So as a recent update, you can actually go and edit list items. And so being able to edit list items in that app makes sense if it's a generic list. But if we want to have that experience that's streamlined, a wizard, things like that, then again, Power Apps make sense, especially because of how easy it is to build things like that. And even outside of SharePoint, obviously, we can connect to other data sources and we can create those same kinds of experiences, et cetera. I won't go through all of this slide. So you guys get the idea. So then the question is, should we use Power Apps or, because here's my or InfoPath and SharePoint Designer, et cetera? And so the quick answer here is you can continue to use InfoPath and SharePoint Designer. I don't know what you've heard. It's okay. It's okay. You can use these things. What I'm suggesting is you should talk to IT if you're a bit in the business side, or talk to yourself if you're in IT, and figure out what's the impact if we build this here. Is this a big process? Is this going to be something we need to maintain for a long time? Is there immediate value in just building it quickly, and we have the talent, we have the skill to build it in InfoPath or SharePoint Designer, and so let's just start there? It's up to you. But the direction is, over time, Power Apps will have be the primary way that you're going to build a lot of these kinds of interfaces that we would traditionally call forms, right? So if you think of that kind of directional story, then it makes total sense to look at this. Now, if you're confused by like Microsoft Forms, like if you go to the Forms, that's an EDU focused thing, education. Sorry. I've worked at Microsoft too long, I have too many acronyms in my head. But if you see that, there's a session, I believe, by Chris McNulty and a couple other people that they talked about that story, so they'll clarify that. I'm not going to dive into that. I think the key message here is that the improvements, all the investment is going into Power Apps. That does not mean that there will be feature parity. So if you love this specific feature inside of InfoPath or SharePoint Designer, it may never come to Power Apps because it wouldn't make sense, right? It's just for a variety of reasons, for engineering reasons and more, you may never have that feature parity. And for that reason alone, there might be times you use the other ones, even years from now as we get closer to that end support date. All right. Whew. So we're at, we got about 44 minutes left, and we've covered the first section. And the way to think about this is the and story is much better now than it was. It's much, much better, but there's still some of those ors that we need to keep in mind. All right, let's talk about the next one, which is visualizing or basically strategizing when to use what inside of our organizations. So at the high level, we have different types of visuals. Now, this is a slightly updated version of what I showed last year. It's very simple. This is a very simplified version of what you'd actually build. But you might want to create some sort of visual for when to use what in your organization. Let me be clear. The purpose of creating the visual is not for the visual's sake. It's for the conversations and the engagement and dialogue that you're going to have internally with different stakeholders that creates this vision. It gives you a clear outcome. We want to get to a point where we can somehow visualize when to use what in our organization at a strategic level. And so that actually creates questions like, well, do we even know why we're using this product? Do we even know, you know, and this, by the way, is a very Microsoft-centric thing. So what are the other enterprise technologies that you have as investments? Maybe you acquired another company recently and they have a really big passion around this technology. You know, should we incorporate that and how should we incorporate it? And of course, there's ideas of scales, right? You see the sense of urgency on the left. We see individual, group, organizational. Some people have done other things where they have internal and external and then they create two different visualizations. It's totally up to you how you do it. They might create visualizations for different divisions or groups within the business because they're a very decentralized model or because they're such a large organization that they can't create a unified front from an IT perspective like that. And that's all okay. The intention here is to suggest there are ways to do this. Go and have the conversation. But if you have the conversation, don't stop there. So the other big gotcha here is a lot of people have this conversation, they define when to use what, but then they don't actually create guidance. So if Jonathan Thomas is here, thank you. There's a lot of examples like this. I had a bunch of slides that I had to pull at the last minute because the customer didn't want to share them that kind of showed a web interface where we built this type of guidance, you know, kind of click-throughs and things like that, a little bit, you know, more specialized, a little bit of customization. But the idea here was take that guidance that you created and start to break it down. Right? Start to detail it in a way that flows with the user, right? The user journey is represented. So here's an example where we have a slide. Let me zoom in on this because it's impossible to read. So we have these use cases. And so maybe the user says, oh, I want to know more about finding experts within this organization. And so when I do that, it kind of does a click through. Let me just stop zooming. There we go. And we can actually see, you know, the various things. And then these link to help articles or training or a variety of other resources. Is this perfect? No. But it's a really great exercise, and it shows that in this case, they've thought more about not just this high level, but actually what does it really mean by scenarios, right? Scenario. I mentioned this a lot last year. So scenario-based guidance, we need to get that detailed. But I mentioned there's this problem. So the problem is technologies in our organization aren't just Office 365. You might have on-premise workloads, and you might continue to have those on-premise workloads, and that's fine. Most of the guidance that I've already provided actually applies to on-premise as feature packs and other things make it available, or if you're in a hybrid state, for sure it applies because you're going to use things like maybe OneDrive for Business and all these other connectors, but you might have a lot of collaboration going on in an enterprise environment on SharePoint 2013 or 2016, et cetera. So then the question is, what about those edge cases? What about every organization that's here, that's over a certain size, probably even the small ones, where you have other technology investments that you don't want to move away from? Here's an example. Let's say this organization has a big development group, and they love wikis. They love Confluence Wiki, and that's what they use. And that's fine, right? I'm not going to say, okay, let's move all those people and disrupt them and say, you need to use SharePoint wikis. You have to. Let's go. Right? Because that doesn't make sense as a business decision. So if they're working and they're happy there, then let's incorporate that into the guidance. And let's make sure we understand when we are encouraging the use of that and when maybe we would say, hey, even in that circumstance, store the documents in SharePoint or something else and create a link to them in that other environment. And yeah, you're going to go back and forth, but maybe that's the right thing. Or maybe it's not because you don't want people to have that disrupted experience. Again, lots of considerations there. Certainly, you can index it, and we'll talk about that. Another one might be you acquire a company, and maybe they're using a different social product, Jive, IBM Connections, Chatter, et cetera. And so because of that, and we don't want to disrupt that or change that immediately, we need to incorporate that into our guidance. We need to understand that, yes, these are competitive, and there's an overlap here, but naturally, there are people, maybe even communities, that already exist in these platforms, so we need to help them either through a journey that we define or through it themselves. And of course, organizations that are using Slack or experimenting with new SaaS services and things like that. Sometimes you have these little pockets that have these different SaaS applications. And again, there's a lot of competitive overlap. There's features that, you know, it doesn't make sense, but we have to enable organizations to experiment and try. We want them to, right? That's the whole point. And so if we can get them to experiment with productivity things, maybe we can compel them that the experience and that the things that they're doing would be better serviced in something like Office 365. That's our job, and that's what we want to help users with. And of course, if you have any of these other file sharing solutions, unsanctioned or otherwise, you should just get rid of them and move to OneDrive for Business. Unlike the other ones, 100%, why are you using any other file sharing service? Richard says, just move it. Tell your boss. Tell your whole team. Tell anyone that's using these things. OneDrive for Business is better. I heard it at the Microsoft conference. Let's just move it. So sometimes I'm a bit more bold, but you get the idea. All right. So what does this mean? If you look at the current state of your organization, it might look very different. Again, these are simplified images. I have something here where I have, again, to fit it on the slide, we have the wiki system. We have all those things that we were talking about. And we have some sort of future utopian state that we're moving towards. So what we have to do is we have to guide the users. To guide users through a journey like this, through scenarios and other things, we need to understand how do they work today. And this might be different for different divisions and departments. So really understand how they work today. As an example, great. They're using Modern Office. They're using Exchange Online. That's awesome. But they also use the C drive. A lot of users are still using that. And in fact, they use the P drive. The P drive is, you know, where we work on our personal files. Not everyone, but a lot of people still use that. Oh, and by the way, we also have the T drive, the S drive, that you know all these other drives. We have this other system as well. And by the way, each of these things, we have to use a VPN to access them because, oh, okay, I understand. And then, and we also use FTPs to share with external people. Got it. And we also have this legacy document management system. But, you know, it's from legal, so if you have records and we have other, you know, so we take a documents, we put them there. Oh, and we have a wiki system, and we have web conferencing. We have multiple web conferencing platforms because who doesn't? We need more of those. And we also have a lot of file sharing tools that we use as individuals or groups. We have some person in my group uses this file sharing tool, so I kind of have to, etc. We have a portfolio and project management system. We have webinar solutions. We have custom PHP intranets. Whatever, you have all this stuff in your organization. So now we understand the current state. And so what we want to do is we want to help the user or this targeted, hopefully targeted set of users understand the journey. So what we're going to do with you guys, here's what we're going to do. This is kind of how you're working today when it comes to Office 365. You're not really using much of Office 365, right? You're using basically Outlook and you're using Office. We're going to help you. We're going to help move you to OneDrive for Business and get rid of those crummy P drives. And that's going to mean you're going to be able to access it from home. And that's going to mean you're going to be able to offline sync it and you're going to have the same experiences you have with those drives. But you're also going to have shared with me and you're going to have all these other things like version control and recycling bins and oh my God, it's amazing. And so they're all super excited. And so then what ends up happening is we go from there into the idea of actually taking something like all those crummy file sharing services that aren't as good as OneDrive and we move those to, I'm being facetious in some somewhat, but we move those to OneDrive for Business and we enable external sharing for users. Now there's IT stuff that's happening on the back end. There's a lot of effort here, right? I'm not saying that it's simple, but we have to explain to the user this is kind of the optimal journey or the journey that we intend for you as this target audience to go through. And we're visualizing it for them, right? We're talking it through with them. We're verbalizing it. We're writing it down, however you want to do it. And so maybe what we do is the next step is we get rid of these web conferencing solutions and we introduce them to Skype for Business and we show them how it's integrated with when you're working in OneDrive and how it's integrated with when you're working in Outlook, which they already use today. And then maybe what we do is we introduce them to SharePoint. Why? Because we take the T drive and the S drive and all these other drives and we move those into project sites and team sites, which are also enabled as groups, which really helps because it allows them to use Planner potentially and other things that we want and Pilot. By the way, when we do this, we actually are enabling Delve because naturally Delve is going to light up now. Before with OneDrive for Business, maybe it didn't because not everyone's sharing documents with one another internally in OneDrive for Business. But certainly when we have these team sites, all the stuff that's normally going in this, whatever the team collaboration environment is, maybe it's file shares, maybe it's something else, when we light that up, Delve is really going to light up. And so that makes total sense to highlight to the user, introduce them to it, and then Planner, and so on and so forth. You guys get the idea. And so if we keep going on this story, I won't describe every one of these. One, because my voice will be hoarse, and two, because you guys, I think, are pretty smart and you're getting it. As we move through this, we're introducing new experiences and new things. And sometimes, if you were to look at this, right, and we introduce a new intranet that's a modern intranet that's part of this experience, it's integrated, we introduce things like the search experiences that we've created either as part of the intranet or we're trying to create enterprise search. As we do these things, we're actually adding more stuff to the user. But at the same time, we're taking away all those other interfaces and inconveniences that they had. And the difference here is even if we add a new experience that we need to teach them, it's an integrated experience. And so that makes it so much more compelling than probably the way that they're working now with different disparate systems. And so it does get a little bit more complicated. Here's an example. We have the search center going on up online because we did the intranet and we can do searches, but we also have content on-prem. We talked about there's a document management system, there's a wiki, there's things like that, or there's in another SaaS provider. Quick example here, FTPs, we get rid of those by doing external sharing. You guys get the idea, create extranets. So what we do in this circumstance is we might create a SharePoint server on-prem. And this is going to help us because what we want is a unified index. We want to have an enterprise search solution that's more unified. So this is an example of a hybrid workload. And there's lots, maybe this starts at the very beginning. Lots of organizations start with OneDrive and with a unified search experience with a cloud search service application. And what you might do in this scenario is you index the content in the traditional document management system or SharePoint or whatever, and then you're indexing also that wiki system. That means we're not moving users from that system. We're just saying, look, you can keep using that, but at least now when you go to search, go to this search, because this search is everything, and this is going to be a better experience for you, and so on and so forth. So you fight your battles, you pick your battles, and you win. There's more slides in the deck that's uploaded. I shortened this because obviously I think you guys get the point. We don't need to go through every single workload here, but it's going to be different for every organization. So actually doing this diligence and thinking through the user journey, and it could be multiple user journeys in your organization, is a really critical point. Don't just stop at defining. I know it's hard to do that, but don't just stop at defining and be, you know, hey, we've got this wonderful when to use what story. We need to make it understandable at the user level. All right. So basically, my quick visual shift here is that it's not a perfect picture. The user stories, however you represent them, are also really critical. Scenarios is probably a better term that I should use. So the last section. I said I promised I would give you actionable, specific things that you can do. Hopefully I gave some ideas and we gave some theory and some direction. Now let's talk about how to make this real. So as you know, you need organizational guidance for when to use what. We talked about that. And that's the pillar, right? Your governance or your basic, you know, guidance, that's what everything rests on. And you need to start there. But it's not the core. most of the weight, most of the activity, most of the stuff that really matters is the stuff that affects individuals and groups. And so if this isn't a strong foundation, we're going to topple. So that's one thing to consider. But it's also really important to actually think about those other two groups. Let me just clarify, when I say organizational guidance, one way of formalizing that. So not only might we have that visual of when to use what or whatever our story is, but we would also want to define very clearly that this is the purpose of this technology, this is its best use for it, this is what, you know, generally we're using it for. And this simplifies it because at an organizational level, you should know every technology investment you have. This is like, you know, enterprise technology strategy 101, right? You should know why you've bought that and why you're furthering your investments into it. And so we're going to define that. And we're going to define it for each technology. And it's going to change a little bit of the guidance. And it's going to change a little bit of the story as we evolve. And you saw a visual example of that change over time. So now let's move on from this. Again, I see a lot of people trying to take pictures. That's OK. Remember, the slides are available. So organizational, got it. Richard, you talked about to death. Now let's talk about the group and individual guidance. Well, of course, we have scenarios, and that really helps. But the magic, basically, is that we have this formula. And the formula for commitment, right, if I want to get commitment from myself or from others, the way that I go about that is I have to have interest. Another way of thinking of interest is awareness. I need to have interest. I need to have an understanding. I need to have a sense of value. And when I have those three things and I maintain those things, then I maintain commitment or I achieve commitment. And that could be shared commitment, so shared interest, shared sense of value, shared sense of understanding, etc. Now, the way we talked about this last year, and this makes total sense, is we talked about it from sort of a gear icon, right? So if we really drive awareness and interest in our organization around all the wonderful things Office 365 can do and how it can help and so on and so forth, if we pick on Office 365, then we're driving this interest. And then what ends up happening is we can start to develop understanding. So we're driving interest, and now we can start to develop understanding, and these correlate with one another, right? Because I'm not going to maintain my understanding or invest in understanding unless I have interest. And then actually after that, we start to understand value, because value starts to be visible because of our understanding, because of our interest, and hopefully becomes shared value. We start to share it in a variety of ways. And then once we start to do that, we might maximize value. And then again, this leads to commitment, and we can start to move that commitment wheel. While this is a great analogy, and I'm still a fan of it, it's not perfect. So what we're going to do is we're going to introduce you to a new concept this year called a funnel. So think of this as the commitment funnel. The thing that gets spit out at the bottom of this funnel are those peer-to-peer champions in your organization. You know who I'm talking about. The non-IT, non-manager people that are actually really helping others understand, spread the interest, and also help others realize value or communicate the value inside their own groups. So that's what we're trying to spit out, right? Because that's how we really tackle that big, hard, difficult area of groups and individuals for their guidance. But the way we do it is we create a funnel. And at the very top of the funnel, as wide as we can make it, we drive interest. We drive awareness, right? The did you know type content. We do a lot of that. And then as we go through the funnel, there's other things, and I'll talk about them, like contests and other things that drive interest. And then we get into understanding. And as we get into understanding, we start to be able to do optimization things, right? We start to be able to do training and how-tos and things like that. And then as we go from there, we get into realizing value, which is all about how do I put this in context for you? How is this going to help you with your business purpose, solution, et cetera, scenario, process, one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to define that. And once we get to this level as an individual or as an organization or as a business unit, now we start to drive towards commitment. Does that make sense? So it's almost like the sales funnel, right? Except we're doing it internally, and it uses the same type of concept. If you want to read this in fine print, this is all the stuff that I just said and just the correlation for the other diagram. So if you were here last year and you're still trying to like process that, that's okay. Take your time and read it afterwards. So the magic, if you will, the thing that makes this funnel possible and the way we execute this funnel in reality is something called a campaign. And a campaign makes sense, right? For adoption, we do a campaign. And a campaign is a combination of things. It's a wonderful concept. Right? So I want to improve how employees recognize one another. I want to improve how we collaborate as an organization so that they can be broad organizational goals that you create a campaign around. So our goal is how do we move that forward in a certain number of days, typically 25 business days, right? Because you want a certain amount of duration. So that's the first step. And then in the campaign, if we actually define all these other things like tips and tricks and contests and training and all these other things, they actually amplify each other. Because if we do them in isolation, they're not going to relate to one another, and we're also not going to have a time period where we can really emphasize and commit to it. Because if you just say, hey, we're going to do more tips and tricks, or we're going to do more training, that's so ambiguous that you don't have a clear commitment strategy. So this allows you to define that. Now again, I'm not saying start at the organizational level. If you have the opportunity, start at a pilot group, et cetera, that makes sense. But if you can't do it there, or if you have the opportunity to do it at the organizational level, there are ways to do this even at that broad scale for a 100,000 person organization, because we've done it. So here's a breakdown of how this actually works. We basically have tips. Tips is the first thing that I'm going to talk about, because tips are basically one of the best tools that we can use for spreading awareness. They're not the only tool, but they're one of the simplest and easiest to build. It requires very little investment from you, and it's one of those ways to incorporate other people into this process. Because the campaign should still be run by one or two individuals, a small group, not by, you know, everyone. Everyone doesn't have a hand in necessarily running the campaign. So when we think of tips, here's how you can involve users, stakeholders, leaders, etc. You can create something called a tip team. So basically what we do is, for every day in the campaign that we're sharing a tip, so in some campaigns you may not do as many tips, maybe you're only doing like two or three per week, but let's pretend for a moment you're doing 25 business days for the campaign and you're doing 25 tips. And your tips are all about, in this case, let's say we're trying to improve collaboration. So if we're trying to improve collaboration, or collaboration matters in our organization, and that's the message, we're going to have a bunch of people that we want to send this message out. And the way that we break out the tip team is we find determinants by location, and we determine them by department, so we have good coverage around whichever target audience in the organization we're really trying to change, right? Help with them with change management. So this is great because you get more people involved and more people are sharing the message. Let's take it further. The tip itself, from a structure perspective, every tip should have a link. The link should be to learn more, right? That's the more how-to type stuff. So the did you know type tip is the starting thing, and then you have the how-to. So that way we have a little bit of a mini funnel, right? Each tip is almost like a mini funnel around whatever that topic is. And by the way, when you go to that other thing, maybe it says, hey, there's training coming up next week, or if you want to register for it, et cetera. So again, we're creating these little funnel effects. You'll see on the left-hand side, I know it's hard to read, so let me just zoom in. On the left-hand side, what we're doing is throughout the campaign, when we think of these days, we're actually creating a theme for the week. This is important because we want the tips to relate to one another, especially if you have a number of tips, and like in this example, we're doing one per day. Now, when we communicate the tips, and I'll come back to communication later, we're going to communicate them in different ways. We might communicate them in Yammer groups, we might communicate them in the Knowledge Hub, if you have one, a Center of Excellence site, something like that. And if you don't have either of those things, then it's a great opportunity to create some place to communicate tips. And then maybe once per week, depending on the size of the audience. So if it's a smaller group that we're doing the campaign with, like a pilot group, then maybe we do an email once per week to that pilot group saying, here's a summary of all this week, right? The tips that were communicated, the contests, the training that's coming up. And at the same time, if it's a broader organization, maybe that's a great intranet post, right? So maybe you have 5 intranet posts over the course of the campaign, that's over 5 weeks, and at the same time we have 25 tips that are going up. And their tips also have to make sense. So here I have an example where I'm trying to improve the discovery of information. It makes total sense as a part of the strategy. Notice that there's a different tip team lead on each of them. Need to keep touching the right device here. And that's one way to potentially drive awareness. But it doesn't stop there. In the bottom here, I have this thing called weekly challenges. And the weekly challenge concept is where I'm giving a person a call to action. Because if you just do a did you know, that may not encourage people. There's people out there that just say, tell me, okay, I get it. You know, I want to improve collaboration. I want to improve discovery. But what's that one thing, that simple one thing that I can do? And so the one thing you can do is, and then you create those different specific challenges, call to action, whatever you want to frame it as. And you can do this in a number of ways. When someone says something like, oh, I want to have a challenge where I want to encourage people to download the applications on mobile apps, or I want to encourage them, I'm a big fan of this one around people filling out their profile. It's a simple call to action. You can have it point to, you know, a help article or something like that. So there's lots of reasons that this makes sense. But you can also make sure that when people do these actions, they can actually be proud of it. So imagine for a moment, people complete, not everyone, a small subset of people are actually doing these actions, then, or these challenges. Then they can post on it in Yammer or wherever conversations are happening in your organization, hashtag it and say, you know, whatever the theme of the campaign is. And again, that spreads more awareness because you have more people championing it. All right, so we talked about tips and challenges. Let's talk about another tool in this toolbox for campaigns. This one is contests. So contests are really powerful, especially when combined with training and tips, the things that I was just mentioning. So if you think about contests, I'll have to zoom in up here again. If you think about contests, we have a number of different types of contests that we might create. So I have some simple examples. So here is an example. We might have a quiz or a scavenger hunt. We might have, I'm just going to pick on this bottom one. We might have something around that collaboration matters, that challenge theme that I was talking about, where we have rewards. You don't have to have prizes that are like an iPad or something like that. Your rewards can be something more simplistic, lunch with an executive or lunch with a leader. There's lots of different options. All of what I'm describing, by the way, is in a white paper that is, again, 70 plus pages, that has all sorts of specific guidance on that. It's an additional white paper. I'll share the link. On the other side, you can actually see we didn't just share the white paper, since this might be also hard to read. We actually shared resources, examples. So there's actually a whole slew of challenges and contest examples at office365resources.com. So hopefully this helps you guys. Let us know what else you want in there. Obviously, we have a lot of client deliverables. We were trying to figure out which ones to like quickly scrub and share as we ramped up for this week. But the idea here is contests matter. Contests are a great way to amplify the efforts of this. And it spreads a lot of awareness, because when you announce contest winners, even if they're not in the first contest, and you do multiple contests, which we encourage per campaign, then we can actually amplify success. I'm going to pick on one vendor, because I really, there's lots of examples like this. Sorry, I had a bunch of other slides. Here's one of the vendors. So Office Vibe has this thing called Face Game. And it's a really fun game. Basically, you go and you use the Office Vibe Face Game as a mini little contest to see, can you recognize people in your organization? And so you could run this little contest around this, and you could use the leaderboards to track it. Or you could even just do this as a part of training or something else to just mix it up so that people aren't just, oh my God, Richard's still talking, right? We can have some level of interaction. I'll come back to that in the training section. So let's do that. Let's talk about training. How does training get incorporated into these campaigns in an effective way? Well, the first thing that we need to recognize is that our training needs to have multiple types of training. We might need to have in a campaign, actually, let me go back. In a campaign, we might have training happen multiple times. We definitely want to have training at the very beginning of the campaign and at the very end. The reason for that is because in most cases, most people aren't even aware of the campaign until further in the month when they start to see all this activity and go, what is this thing? And they finally look it up and then, oh, there's training. Well, maybe I'll take part in that. So because the funnel is running for a period of time. So for training, as an example, you might create something like Office 365 101, and you might have modules like this. And maybe it's short or maybe it's long. You define the training. Maybe you do this and you do a bunch of pre-recorded videos that are 5-minute videos for self-training and things like that that you upload to Office 365 video. Another thing on the right-hand side here, as we move to each slide, is this idea that you actually want to incorporate exercises. So I can tell you with assurance that pretty much every organization in the world that's trying to train on things like Office 365 is training with remote participants. And so if you're training a remote audience and you have one to few or one to many, then you need to create ways of interacting, because it's really unengaging. No matter how exciting you are in your voices, and I always stand up when I'm training at my desk, but what ends up happening is you still can't quite pull everyone in, and not everyone's going to be able to maintain that level of interest and commitment. There's lots of activity studies, attention span studies on this. So what do? We add exercises. But the exercises aren't just for fun, like the face game. The exercises are meant to communicate a concept. So here's an example of a simple exercise you can incorporate. If I'm training on the app launcher and I'm training on Office 365, maybe what I do is I have everyone unpin their apps from the app launcher, and as we go through it, they pin those apps again as we go through each step. So I'll say, hey guys, we just finished that, so now go add that app to your app launcher, and we'll all be able to see that in the future. This can also help simplify and make sure users know that they don't have to feel overwhelmed. They can pick what matters and what doesn't. Another example of this, I love co-authoring. I love OneNote. And so a lot of times we want users to understand that there's this shared notes inside of groups or inside of SharePoint sites. So we can actually encourage people to use that experience and have them do a co-authoring, a big edit exercise. This is possible because OneNote supports massive numbers of audiences, even if we don't have one to few. If you have one to few, you can even have co-authoring on Word documents or other things that you kind of preload. But here what we're doing is we're basically saying, almost like a scavenger hunt, go fill out these things, put your name here, put your name there, draw a picture. That's one of my favorite ones, right, to introduce thinking. So draw a picture with your hand or with your mouse in this section. And so each person's creating their own pages and sections. And it gets really messy really quickly, but it shows them that, in fact, OneNote is really dynamic and allows massive numbers of people to work. And this is great because we want people to do this in meetings. And we're having a meeting. We're doing a training meeting, and everyone's able to coordinate. And as a facilitator, I'm going to pick the appropriate sections and show it. And really, I'm not doing much. I'm just more explaining the wonderful things people are doing, or I'm explaining kind of gotchas. And sometimes it's funny. People start to write on each other and write jokes and things like that. Also, you want to make sure if you're doing this exercise, it's not just a fun exercise, that you're explaining that, hey, this is where these are located. So you're incorporating it into what you would normally do in Slideware, let's say, or you might do in demos, but now at least there's some level of involvement. Now, coaches and champions, I said, was the outcome of the funnel, right? That's our goal. We want to create more and more of those. But it's also a great resource throughout the campaign. So make sure that you're maximizing them. Make sure that you're finding different ways, like office hours and other things, and you're amplifying their efforts during that campaign. And of course, they're going to be 100% behind it, and they're going to be one of your biggest contributors to things like responses to tips and things like that in the campaign. You also want to make sure that you understand the value of coaching. So the simple point here is that the number one way that people learn and the number one efficiency for learning is when you learn from a non-IT, non-manager. And the reason for that is because I often don't want my manager to know that I don't know something, and I often don't want IT to know that I don't know something, and so I deal with it. Or IT is so overwhelmed that I know I don't want to bother them, and so I want to deal with it myself. This is especially true in Canada, because we say sorry a lot, and we don't want to bother people. But you guys get the idea. So this peer-to-peer learning is really important, and that's why at the end of that funnel, we're trying to create that. Let's talk about value. So obviously we have a campaign, so that means we have a duration of time, and that allows us to do a couple things. It allows us to plan communication throughout this campaign so that we're doing lots of communication during it and then maybe a little bit after the campaign, including, and this is important when you plan communication, including communication to leadership around the purpose of the campaign. Like, why are we even doing this campaign? In this case, the pilot participants is a smaller group. It's a pilot campaign. So we might have the kickoff email or something like that. We might have the tips and tricks. You're saying, when are the tips posted? Where are they posted? How are we doing it? Maybe once per week. In this case, they're sending an email. But again, that could be on the internet. How are we communicating training signups? How are we communicating when a new training is available? When are we communicating that? On the right-hand side here, we actually create the emails. This is important because once the campaign gets started, you do not want to have to try and write all these emails. So you're trying to prefabricate all this. All of the things that I've described, the tips, the tip team, the writing out all this communication planning, figuring out, at least from a high level, what training you need to do, not executing the training, but the rest of it, you can do all of that in less than 3 days with one person. So all you need to make something like this a reality is one person for up to 3 business days. Now, obviously, you can spend more time on it, and you can make the campaign more successful, and you can involve others. And if you're doing an organizational campaign, I'm sure you're going to need more resourcing. But it doesn't need to be the most expensive activity, right? So again, this isn't necessarily saying you need to have everything perfect. The other thing I wanted to talk about when we talk about value is the idea of measurement. So because it's a campaign, we can have a baseline measurement, and then we can actually measure the impact as the campaign progresses, and eventually even show the after effects. So after 3 months, or 2 months, or 6 months after the campaign ends, do we see sustained usage and sustained things? Or do we need to maybe fire up a new campaign that targets a different workload or a different gap in the business that we want to improve, not just usage, but to improve understanding and to improve the way people work and change that? And for cultural change, it takes a long time. So these are almost like little sprints or accelerators to drive cultural change for those that are ready for the change. And then the next wave, the next time we do a campaign, we can target a different group of people, right? Or we have a different group of people. Some people never make it through the funnel. They're aware of it, and they stay up here, and they never get to the understanding, and that's okay as well, right? So examples of planning for measurement, there's lots of ways to report on this. Again, just to save you guys some effort, we put another white paper. I think this one's, again, 70-plus pages. We're really bad at that, sorry. So inside this white paper, it actually has all of the capabilities that are out of the box that you can use for metrics, and then we also broke down the types of business impacts. So each of these little points here that we have. We're actually explaining in the white paper how you can measure things like the time shift value. So when you have meetings and you record the meetings and you share the meetings, that actually has an ROI because you're time shifting, and that reduces travel, that reduces time commitment at that point in time, it reduces conflicts, et cetera. So there's ways to calculate ROI. And obviously some of the simpler ones are like, hey, we have a process, we have a starting cost and an ending cost as we go through iterations of the process and so on and so forth. But if you're not sure where to start, that might be a good resource for those who are going through that. So, taking a step back, what we're really saying is, let's not think of it just as those gears, although that's a really important idea. Let's think about this as we want to drive commitment and we want to drive change. And if we're going to drive change, we need to take action. And so what I'm saying is, here's a framework for taking action. You don't have to use this, you can use other techniques, but this is a pretty effective framework because we've seen incredible success with organizations, big and small, executing things in a combined and coordinated way, which is done in a campaign. So that's my point around kind of the how-to. And so think about this kind of diagram. How do we really tackle that group and individual stuff? We tackle it with a funnel or a campaign type approach. With that, if you are overwhelmed and you want to be even more overwhelmed, go watch last year's and hear Camel and I present on the same topic. And these complement each other, so it's always worth a listen. And then download the white paper when you have a chance, whentousewhat.com. Please tell me what you liked and what you'd like to see more of. We definitely have time for questions. And so there's all the links. There's all the information you need. Thank you, everyone. Let's do some questions. So I think we have... Thank you. All right, that's enough clapping. Let's get speed, guys. Let's get as much out of this session as we can. Who has a question? Anyone have a question? If you go to the mic, because they're recording. No one's bold enough. All right, I will give another example while we're waiting. If someone gets to a mic, just like speak up into it and let me know. It's hard to see in this room because it's so big.
I had a question.
Yep.
On one of your slides, you said there's going to be a O365 group calendar coming soon. Can you talk to that?
So Office 365 Groups has a calendar right now. It's a very robust calendar. In a couple sessions, they actually did a deep dive and they explained the improvements that they've made to the Office 365 calendar, and they're quite substantial. So as an example, here's a when to use what discussion, right? Let's amplify this. So instead of just saying, hey, we have this wonderful new calendar and it's awesome, which it is in Office 365 Groups, and it has a roadmap and new features coming, let's think about the question, which is, should we use a SharePoint calendar? Should we use the Office 365 group calendar, et cetera? Especially now that we have SharePoint sites which have the group calendar. And the quick answer to that is, I would use the group calendar in almost every situation, except where I have very specific like customization scenarios where the group calendar may not have the APIs and other things that I want. So if you're a developer, maybe it's different. But generally speaking, the group calendar is just so much more integrated with Outlook and the experiences where people do scheduling, which is really what calendars are often about. And it makes it really easy to copy it to your Outlook calendar, that I would probably emphasize the use of Office 365 group calendars for connected sites and those environments. And if it's not connected, again, hey, why change it if it's not broken? If people are working, it's working fine inside the SharePoint site. There's also times like maybe you have a custom a vacation request scenario that I was describing. That's more of like a list, or we're using the event concept in and that would be another example for SharePoint. Another question?
So quickly, you know, like if you can summarize the difference between Yammer groups and Office 365 groups, and when to use Yammer groups and Office 365.
Yeah, so I think the biggest difference is the conversations features. So in Yammer and Office 365 groups, we have the core things that you need, like the at references, right, and things like that. But in Yammer, you also have this wonderful concept of topics, and the topic, like the hashtag, becomes really helpful in Yammer across groups, right, for amplified messages, for potentially roll-ups and embedding inside of other environments like SharePoint or third-party products. Another big thing about Yammer is it has more, even though Office 365 Groups has connectors, there's an ecosystem that's been around for a while in Yammer. So if I'm using CRM, not Microsoft CRM, but I'm using a Salesforce or some other provider, then again, maybe I use Yammer because there's connectors that are built in there. Those same providers, those companies are working on Office 365 connectors, right? And they're making it so that that's possible. But it really depends on where that is from a landscape perspective, right? Where, how far along they are in the roadmap. Beyond those two things, I think it's very minor things at that point. We're talking about polling, right? So polling is a feature that you have in Yammer. There's the concept of praise. There's other interactions that happen in a sort of Yammer newsfeed that we don't have in conversations today. And so there might be some other reasons that you might use that. But I really think it comes down to that conversation versus newsfeed discussion. Everything else, it's basically a value add. Yammer and these things, or you know, groups and these things, with the other elements of groups. Next question.
Hey, Richard, thanks for an awesome presentation. I'm literally giddy with excitement. I'm curious, all the campaigns that the campaigns that you were talking about seem to be more fixed in their duration, so a month or so. What about more long-term sorts of things, like user groups or that kind of thing? Because I'm afraid that I'm going to do something awesome, and then, you know, 6 months later, people will have forgotten.
So it's probably a couple slides back, but one of the things that I had mentioned was how these champions and programs for champions, I did have champions programs, so user groups, communities, those go across the campaign in infinite duration. So the campaigns can be a great way to find new members and to amplify the messaging of that. In fact, one of the things that we often have is like a tip or a couple other things that actually talk about the group, we incorporate into the training, those types of things. So yes, you should do that, but here's a really big caution point. The reason we have a campaign is it has a set date, which means we can commit to it. And the problem sometimes we get into is organizations say, well, we want to just do it forever as a service. And I'm 100% behind it, right? Hey, it's great for me. I can make a bunch of money if I'm helping you. Or internally, if you're a resource, you're like, awesome. I'm kind of set for a long period of time working at this organization, just doing all these. But I still would break it into little campaigns, and I would just execute campaigns. I'll give you an example. You could have a two-week campaign that's just about improving SharePoint understanding for site owners and kind of creating more site owner communities and groups inside of the SharePoint space. And so maybe that's a mini two-week campaign that we do front or after, or we spend, typically you want a little bit of buffer between the campaigns because it's hard, right, to prepare for them and to manage them. But generally, yes, is the quick answer to that. We want to incorporate it. And for sure, the long tail goal of all of this is that we're doing this on a regular basis, not just quarterly or yearly. Next question. Is there one over here? Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, just to speak more about the long-term commitment, there's a challenge around employees coming and going, right? And so when we bring employees on board, we have an IT onboarding process where we show them kind of what to use when. But with the idea that IT might not be the most effective way to do that, and also the bulk of the information to try to communicate to them, what are you seeing in organizations for effective onboarding of new employees?
So first let me explain a quick point, which is these campaigns tend to be amplified. So you might have an okay campaign the first time, but then because it's around remember, the idea isn't the campaign's about a technology, although the SharePoint one was. Generally, they're about like broader organizational change, right? We want to improve recognition, whatever. Those are things that, if you really think about it, we're producing a ton of content. Right? The end product of that is two things happen, right? At the organizational level, people amplify the message and go, that was awesome, let's do something like that again, or they all brag about it for the next year as leaders. And then another thing that we end up doing is we realize maybe we need to incorporate a little bit more of this into the onboarding process. And so we take elements of what we created, typically that knowledge hub or the center of excellence that we've created, because it has the tips and it has all this other, you know, self-service training and other things that we've built, and we actually make it so that people can kind of go through their own sort of checklist. And there's lots of levels, like some organizations are really rigorous, and they say this is the process flow, and each new hire for this group is going to be, because they're using Office 365, they're using all these things, they should be going through these checklists to validate that they've kind of gone through elements of the campaign, or they almost create a little funnel. So you can do that. Or you could take a much more relaxed approach to it. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think generally speaking, you definitely want to add some process, and you want to incorporate things like adoption, the stuff that we were talking about, into new hire orientations. But it's up to the business unit whether or not that's a priority, because there's always too much content in those orientations and that onboarding. So maybe it's more of a softer approach that you take versus kind of doing the rigorous incorporation. One last point. Inside the white paper as well, we talk about rewards and incentives. And there's a questionnaire that you could even take. And the idea here is rewards and incentives also matter, because a lot of times the first thing you're introduced to when you join an organization is kind of the motivators and, like, you know, what the organization recognizes. So you have to make sure that the things that we're trying to drive, these cultural changes, are also being recognized. And that's a big critical component that's often missed. And that actually is most visible often when you think about the onboarding experience for users, because if we're always talking about other things and we're not talking about, you know, these types of things, then we're never going to change the organization, because new people are going to just be entrenched in the same cultural narrative that we have.
So this is maybe more of a governance question than a real question, but so with all this sort of surface area to collaborate on, what I'm seeing in our organization, you know, so we've invested in community, you know, SharePoint communities, and you know, now there's groups, and what I call what I'm seeing is sort of the empty soccer field syndrome, which is, you know, you got two kids playing over there, you got four kids playing over there, but nobody's coming together all the way in one hub or in one, you know, sort of super community.
We call that mob ball. So I have nephews and nieces, and we have a baby on the way next month. And when you watch the kids play, they totally do exactly that, right? They basically follow the ball around as a mob, and then when they have the opportunity to kick, they kick it, right? And so the quick answer to this, I think, from a modeling perspective, is that governance should be thought of as a team dynamic. I love American football, right? So in American football, you have a defensive team, you have an offensive team, right? You have a quarterback, you have a punter, you have different roles and specializations. And so similarly, when we look at something like Office 365 or this canvas of different collaboration technologies, modalities, however you want to phrase it, we have to come up with our own teams. I think teams is the way to think about it, right? So the reason I don't say steering committees and stuff like that is because they have a lot of other onus. So teams make sense. So if you think about that same analogy, if I have really poor governance, like unstructured, et cetera, it means that I haven't really thought things through. I haven't created playbooks, right, in the same analogy we were using. And so it's not that you might not have the best talent. I might have the best talent in the world in my organization. But if we don't at least create a little bit of structure, we can't get the most out of that talent, right? We can't, just like in the defensive line, et cetera, it's different skills. So again, I think the simple answer to that is that the definition of like policies and guidance and things like that should be driven from the team. And those are outcomes from basically the team coordinating around gaps, right? Whether it's operational gaps, whether it's end user. I'm sure that might not have been your full question, but I wanted to add into that because it's totally a topic I'm passionate about. Continue.
Thank you.
Oh, awesome. Any other questions? Looks like we're almost out of time anyways. Thank you, guys. And be sure to check out the recording, because I know I talk too fast. Thank you, everyone.